documentary on News Talk.
Now in documentary and drama on News Talk, 45 years of listening, the story of Dublin Lesbian Line tells the story of Dublin Lesbian Line, an essential community-led resource founded in 1979 through personal reflections of the original founders and current volunteers. A warning that the documentary contains historical language that some listeners may find upsetting.
A year ago, the Irish gay rights movement was founded in Dublin to fight for the rights of Irish homosexuals. Ireland is the only sovereign EEC country to still retain criminal sanctions in law against homosexuality, with penalties from 10 years to life imprisonment. In studio tonight, we have the national chairman of the Irish gay rights movement, David Norris. David, are homosexuals sick people?
The Vatican report mentions child adoption, military service, as well as the employment of teachers and sports instructors as areas where discrimination on the basis of homosexual tendencies is not unjust.
If you're in a group of flats and there's a family living in the flats next to you, if there's two gay people living in the flat beside you, there's a problem there, you know. You don't know what they're going to do next, right?
I think it's very, very wrong when they try to flaunt it.
We have seldom in our 23 years of the Late Late Show experienced a barrage of complaint and criticism about this next item as we have experienced this week. Some of it mainly anonymous callers on the telephone being extraordinarily hostile, aggressive, abusive, and indeed on occasions obscene. The item is about a book called Breaking Silence, Lesbian Nuns on Convent Sexuality. Now, if this is the item which you think would be upsetting to you and the members of your family, then perhaps it would be a good thing to warn you, and you may be advised to leave us now.
You don't wish at any time that you were like the girls you work with out chasing fellas at dances or whatever girls do?
Not at all. I wouldn't change my life or myself for anything. You know, I'm happy the way I am, in everything in life.
Although presumably there may be problems ahead of you, which you wouldn't have if you were heterosexual.
But there again, there could be problems ahead of me if I were heterosexual and not gay that I wouldn't have being gay.
Homosexual, we could sing it loud now. We could sing it loud now. We could sing it loud now. Yeah, I'm proud. I ain't sorry. I ain't sad for all the years I've been had. Strutting around like a heavy duty pup.
My name is Jill, my pronouns are she, they, and I am a volunteer and a board member with Dublin Lesbian Line.
Hi, my name is Hannah, my pronouns are she and her. I volunteered with Dublin Lesbian Line for almost 6 years now, so it's been quite a while. Yeah, that's me.
I'm Val Harrigan, I use the pronouns she, they. I am the chair of the board for Dublin Lesbian Line, just recently took on that role, and I've been volunteering with the charity for over 2 years.
My name is Marina Forrestal, and I'm one of the founders of the Dublin Lesbian Line Collective. Gay men didn't have autonomy over their old bodies, and that's the law that they were actually criminalised under. For women and for lesbians, it kind of meant that the laws around autonomy and around your own body had to do, of course, with reproduction. There was no contraception and abortion. There was no divorce. And that seems like it wouldn't affect lesbians. But it did, actually, because women at that time didn't earn equal pay, wasn't in, or it was just beginning. There were a lot of jobs and professions that were cut off for women. I think around 1970, women earned about 50% of male wages. So the idea of being a lesbian was really an outrageous thing that people kind of couldn't understand. How could you live your life without a man? Like, how could you do that? We were sort of raised as girls often to prioritize the men in the family. like get up, let your brother sit down would be kind of a common thing. Men would get fed first sometimes, or the most, you know, things like that. And you'd clean up after your brother, you'd wash your brother's shirts. You were expected to kind of go from the home to marriage and children and to follow that track. And the banks didn't give credit to women unless you had the signature of a man, any man. In 1980, I went to rent television. I had a full-time job, full-time pensionable job. And the man in the shop said that I couldn't rent the television unless I had the signature of a man, any man. So how could I imagine that I could live without a man? And also, you couldn't get a mortgage, actually. Even if you were working in a bank, you couldn't get a mortgage. One of the women who worked long-term on Lesbian Line, Anya O'Connell, she worked in a bank and she wasn't able to get a mortgage in her own name. I came to Dublin in 1974, kind of a girl from the country. And at that time, what happened was, if you didn't know anybody in Dublin, if you didn't have relatives, you often went into a hostel run by nuns. So I went into one of those hostels, and there I met a woman that I got involved with. And we lived together for about 5 years. And I was very much in love with her, but we didn't have a name for what we were or what the relationship was. And it's kind of interesting, sometimes I think there's a saying, if you can't name it, you kind of can't be it, you don't know what you are. It leaves you in a kind of a never-never land of not connection, of not being, not really having an identity. And I certainly had no identity at that time. I hadn't seen any television programs or read any newspaper articles or met any lesbians as far as I knew. Of course I did, but I didn't know. Then when we broke up, I kind of had no supports. There wasn't anybody really who knew about this and who could support me. And it was a terrible secret, kind of. It was the kind of secret that could mean that you could lose your family, you could lose your job, you could lose everything, really. I mean, if you had children, you could lose your children. So it was frightening. It was very frightening. My experience of rural Ireland, so that would be until I was 18, living in the Midlands and going to school there. And, you know, I have since spoken with a couple of the women that I thought maybe at the time, a woman I had a crush on, for instance, in secondary school. And, you know, at a school reunion, when they asked those normal questions like, you know, did you get married? Do you have any children? And I said, I'm gay, and I was always gay, and those opportunities weren't available to me. And she said, you may not be the only one. And I said, well, actually, I think I had a crush on you. And she says, yeah, I know. And I asked her about her life, and she said, you were so brave to me. And she felt that she wasn't able to leave or to live another life or to find out about it even, you know, to explore that in any way in her life. I didn't want to live a secret life someplace in the country, just me and her pretending to be good friends, really, and frightened that it'd be found out. Women went to the cities very often for that sense of freedom. Even if you didn't know it was because you were lesbian, it was just for the freedom even, because there were so many other types of repression. I contacted Telefriend after quite some time of struggling with it, really. And I contacted Telefriend, and a man answered the phone. He was really nice, and he asked, would I like to speak with a woman? And I said, yes. And I spoke with Mary Kinnan that night, and later on, she arranged another date for herself and a woman called Bajella Breen to meet me in a pub somewhere in Dublin. And we did that. And they asked me if I'd like to come to the Hirschfeld Centre later on that night. And I went with them. That's how I initially came out. Being gay was kind of part of a whole kind of alternative subculture, I suppose, in Dublin. The Hirschfeld Centre opened in 1979. And before that, there was a phone line. And there were, you know, social activities and there was political organizing. But the Herschel Center gave us our own place. That meant an awful lot. That space gave space to creation of things, to imagining things and creating those things. So Lesbian Line was created. Joni Crone was one of the founders, and she was the woman who was the first Irish woman to be on television. She was interviewed on The Late Late Show, herself and Magella Breen, and Mary Kinnan, who answered my call the night that I rang, and Pauline O'Donnell and Christine O'Brien. They all worked on the phone line. In the Herschel Centre, the phones were there. We had an office. So, you know, training, we needed training. Training was organized with the Samaritans at one point. Samaritans were very helpful. They gave some training, so that was really good. And, you know, a lot of it was trial and error. It was listening to one another. I got involved in Lesbian Line very soon after making that call myself. It was a telephone listening, information and referral service. You weren't to be there as a counsellor to anybody, right? You were there to listen. Now, that was the really important part of it. And we got better at it. We made mistakes. We got more training. We talked with other people. We talked with the men. We found out things from them. We moved from the Herschel Centre to the Council for the Status of Women. And I was part of that move at one time. And we went to whoever was the telephone operating company. And we said we wanted a phone for Lesbian Line. And like, phones were not easy to get, remember, right? For your house, the phone wasn't easy to get. You had to wait, I think it was months to get a phone. But when we used the word lesbian to the person, he put down his pen and he said, well, if you're doing anything illegal here, you're not going to get a phone line. Getting the word around about what was going on was difficult because no newspaper would take our ads. And you couldn't pay them to take our ads. There was one magazine, Hot Press. Hot Press took our ads. Thank you to Hot Press. Never forget them for it. They took the ads. And then the rest of the time, it was word of mouth, or we had stickers. We used to stick them on toilet doors. We used to stick them in restaurants, particularly vegetarian restaurants, or someplace that was considered vaguely alternative. You know, bookstores. You could put your poster up on their wall. Posters were taken down. Stickers were ripped off. We got the word out as well as we could, so that other women would know the number, or that there was a number to look up, that they could just talk to somebody. Just talk to somebody. I remember quite a few calls were silent calls. Women couldn't even get the words out. And that was considered a call. That was a serious call. That was noted as a call. So it was getting the word out that Lesbian Line was there, and just being there to pick up the phone and hold it for a little while somebody, all they could do is breathe. It was a very important job. We were kept fairly busy. It had high points and low points, in terms of numbers. Christmas time being, I think, high time, for instance, you know. Times of stress in people's lives, you know. They'd phone. As I said, some of the phone calls were silent calls. Sometimes they could only say a few things. They'd cry. There were some that just wanted to know, where is it at? People had all kinds of stories. They were married. They had children. They were worried about them. How could they be themselves? What were they going to do? They had met somebody and they didn't know what to do. Am I gay? They'd ask, am I gay? Tell me. They wanted somebody to tell them they were gay or not, or tell them they definitely weren't gay. That doesn't make you gay. They were looking for answers like that. They were very confused. Sometimes they wanted to talk about sex. There was no information out there. Like, there was no information out there virtually about heterosexual sex. You had to have a certain amount of courage even to ask. We had a lot of hoax calls also. Well, a lot. Yeah. Maybe they stand out because they were upsetting sometimes. I remember women being very upset. Very, very, very upset. Looking for answers, looking for solutions, crying, trying to make it not be the case. And I remember women then gradually as well just wanted to know, they wanted to hear sometimes that we had done it. Like, what was it like? By done it, I mean come out. Be okay with yourself. That was a thing. And I remember in the beginning hearing myself, I remember hearing Joni on The Late Late Show, and it was like, would you rather, if you could change it, would you? And to hear her say no, she wouldn't, that she was happy being who she was. I thought, well, now I can kind of believe coming out and I can kind of believe that you'd be all right with it eventually, but I can't imagine that you'd go, do you know, I choose this. It's just fine. I couldn't imagine coming to that level of acceptance. So women were struggling at various, they had reached various levels of acceptance sometimes. And they were wanting to work those things out with you, sometimes on the phone.
So it was founded in 1979, and really it was to meet, I guess, quite a big need at the time for lesbians based in Ireland where they didn't have a source of support. Yeah, it's been around a very long time and it's continued to offer that support all throughout the years. More recently, it's begun to evolve to meet the changing needs of our community. So luckily, Irish society has become more progressive. It doesn't mean there's not still many challenges within that. We know a report just came out in the last, I think, 24 hours that show that LGBTQ plus hate crimes are on the rise in Ireland. So I think those supports are more essential now than ever.
When I started volunteering with the organisation, when I suppose the helpline was still the primary focus of the organisation, most of the calls that I would have received or would have heard about were centred around gender identity as a topic, and a lot of them would have been from trans women who were not out or maybe hadn't come out to anybody yet or had come out to a couple of people but hadn't had the opportunity to live life as their authentic self and hadn't got the opportunity to maybe be called a name, their chosen name or something like that. So it was really important to them, again, to reach out to another woman and be able to talk about that experience. So that was a lot of what the focus of the calls was then. And then if we can move into kind of the COVID times, and then in the last couple of years, what we're really seeing is through the helpline and then through some of our community events, is there's a real focus on need for community. During COVID, we actually had to shut the phone line completely because our offices, we just couldn't social distance in that. So there was no way for us to do that safely during the pandemic. And so that forced us to kind of push forward the conversation we had already been having for a long time about other ways we could support the community. So we started doing webinars, we had some international speakers on different things, and then we crucially started our Find Your Community events. So they were like 2-hour Zoom meetings where people could sign up, there was speed friending, and we'd do a little bit of LGBT history and a little bit about terminology and stuff like that. I suppose that was giving people currency to be able to go into queer spaces and not feel afraid they were going to say the wrong thing and offend someone or whatever if they were just coming out for the first time. And that kind of finding your community is where I think we really found a groove there. We found a niche that was really needed in the community, and so we've kind of kept that going past COVID. So we'd still do them online sometimes, and we also really focus now on community-based events.
So it's a hard thing to encapsulate because it does so much, but events is our focus right now, and we have a sideline project which is working with the Switchboard, who are an LGBTQIA listening service, and on a Tuesday night they do what's called Women's Night. So I was involved with them for a while, they won't mind me saying that, and having been involved in Dublin Lesbian Line and the Switchboard, who were originally Tell a Friend Together, I had visions of this kind of, you know, coming together of the two organisations, and I felt the time was right that we could absolutely do this. Dublin Lesbian Line's helplines, of course, they had to close in 2020, we were a victim of COVID. So there was no dedicated service out there for women, but the Switchboard was doing a women's night. And the importance of that is, you know, when you call the number, you're going to get through to a woman. It's not about who calls on the night, it's about the volunteer who is working on the night. It's the person you get through to. That's the really important part. So I wanted to offer Dublin Lesbian Line a chance to come back to being a helpline again, if it was wanted. Over the years on Dublin Lesbian Line, I would say I have spoken to more men than women, and in general, it does seem to be that more men call us. We would never ever turn away a caller. And a lot of men who cross-dress in particular would speak to us, particularly I think because there's still a big stigma around men who are dressing in what's considered women's clothing. and they would like to speak to a woman about this because they feel it could go a bit better. I've had men talk to me about, you know, tights and stockings and, like, you know, how do these things work and how do you look at sizes and things like that. And I remember a fantastic conversation with one man who had thrifted a wedding dress through a thrift shop and loved dressing up in it. And I had the most fantastic conversation with that guy about what he paired with it and how he felt when he was wearing it and just the joy that he expressed and he could freely express to somebody who was, you know, just listening and just providing it. Wow, that's so cool. I wish I could find a dress like that, something that incredible. That's a huge find. And celebrating this aspect of his life that he admitted he didn't share with anyone else. It was huge. We do, of course, get calls from women, and, you know, in particular, married women would be a big caller segment for us. And they would be women in marriages to men who may have known for their whole lives that they have a same-sex attraction, who may have, you know, pushed it down, who may be bi and have married men, but as they've gotten older, they have discontent maybe in their marriage or they wish to explore this. Very often there are children involved, and it's just about negotiating that. And I find that really complex, especially with women who are parents, because it's hard to bring them back from talking about their children. As a volunteer, I'm there for the caller, for the person on the line. And that's particularly true as well of parents of LGBTQI children. And we would get a few of those calling as well, and they're always looking for advice to tell us, you know, what they're doing, maybe to tell us about something they slipped up and said.
I think, again, it goes back to that, you know, welcoming people in from, I love to think about, I'm training to be a psychotherapist, so I love to think about, you know, unconditional positive regard. So we accept everybody from that place. And, you know, we have such a mixture of volunteers in our group that people have very different life experiences, and it's kind of championing those experiences and learning from each other.
Do you know, I think it's been really lovely to volunteer in a place where that is the primary focus. I suppose I've always counted myself very lucky. I came out when I was 14 and I kind of always had queer people in my life. That was always the primary focus of my friendship groups. And so I probably took that for granted a little bit in my experience. And it was only as I started to kind of volunteer with DLL that I seen, like, how that's not everybody's experience.
Well, for me, like, crucial, I came out later in life. Oh, I didn't come out. I actually moved to Australia when I was almost 30 and came out, did my coming out there. And that was quite interesting because I felt like I was in a bubble. So I was in my Australia bubble. And then I moved back to Ireland about 2.5 years ago and I had no community here. I had a lot of friends from when I lived here before, but I didn't have access to that community. So for me, Dublin Lesbian Line was my like gateway.
There's still so many people who struggle to come out to themselves and come out to the world, and then find a community can be really, really tough, especially when I suppose so much of the community is based around drinking and like club culture and stuff like that, which is great as well, but it's for someone who's maybe just exploring that side of their identity, it can be really tough for that to be the only outlets for that.
That's something that we're very conscious of, is we want to be for everybody. We are a service for adults, so over 18s, but I think we're very conscious that, you know, the society that we live in Dublin and in Ireland can be very like based around the pub, and a certain like age demographic tend to go to the pub, and it's how do we open up to be for people at all different stages of their lives. We always encourage everybody to come to our events, and I think it was interesting, we ran a night called Dyke Night last year, which was a night that had been run historically for Pride, and it hadn't been around for a few years because of COVID, and we brought it back, and there was such an age range at that night, everybody from like 19 to I think over 70. So to see that in one room together, I think is so important, especially for LGBT people and lesbians that might not necessarily have older queer role models in their lives. I know for myself growing up, that was not something that I had. That's why it took me so long to come out, because I didn't have a point to, or like anybody to identify with. So I think it's really critical. And that's something that we like for anybody listening, if you're from an age demographic that you feel isn't represented, come to us, talk to us. We'd love to see what we can do to create more of those spaces.
What's really important to the organisation is intersectionality and being able to understand that our lived experiences are compiled, nothing exists in a silo. So yeah, all of us are queer and are women or non-binary, but at the same time very few of our volunteers are people of colour. Like, we only have one volunteer who's a person of colour. That in itself is a barrier for someone to access the space. Also, we don't have a huge cohort of volunteers who are disabled and whatever. There's the kind of loads of different examples of that. So I suppose it's important that while we're working within those limitations of our own team, that we recognise our own knowledge base, our own experience base, and then try and prepare for other experiences outside of that. One of the big things for us is to collaborate with other organisations who would kind of understand that bit more. And then I suppose it's just kind of meeting people where they are as well. It's not to be afraid of, I actually have never heard of that experience before, if it's not something, and asking someone to say or explain what that experience was like for them. And yeah, I suppose it's about meeting people where they are. We can't be all of the experiences, we're never going to have all of the experiences in our head, but we can meet someone with kindness and see what it is that we can connect with them on.
Yeah, so I think if you look at the history of lesbian activism, we've always been stalwarts of all causes. Interestingly, I think lesbianism has always been a very fluid term, and we've accepted people from all walks of society into our communities. And it's actually only starting to be questioned and change in more recent times, which makes me quite sad. I think that's something that we've really taken in from the UK, is this, you know, really transphobic narrative, which I don't think there needs to be any place for within our communities. Our communities are only like improved and enriched by having trans and non-binary people as part of them. So I think there's so many lessons to be learned from what's gone in the past, and to look at how lesbians showed up for the wider community all through the decades, and to think about how Dublin Lesbian Line can continue that. And as part of our strategic plan that we're currently finalising, as part of our overall review as what is the charity now, we're really thinking about how we can do more in that space, be those advocates, have that voice. What does the community want, and how can we deliver on that?
You're listening to 45 Years of Listening, the story of Dublin Lesbian Line on Documentary and Drama on Newstalk. You're listening to Documentary and Drama on Newstalk. This is 45 Years of Listening, the story of Dublin Lesbian Line.
To me, Dublin Lesbian Line really is, you know, at the heart of a community, a place that people that need to find others that they identify with and feel comfortable around can come together to share space, whether that is anonymously over the phone line to protect their privacy, or whether it's actually in person. Our role is to find ways to create that for people that live in Dublin and across Ireland.
It's really, really important to me to always have that connection directly into my community. As I said, I came out when I was 14. I've always had queer friends, and that's been like my lived experience. But I also am so aware that not everybody is as lucky as me. Not everyone has as supportive a family as me. And it's important for me, I suppose, to stay grounded in the community like that. But also, like, I care about queer people. I care about my community. And so if I can be of help in any way, then I want to do that. I suppose it's important for queer people to do that, because like, that's our history. We've always looked after each other, like, that's what we do.
So I grew up in rural Ireland, and then I relocated to Dublin when I was in my very early 20s. And for me, growing up in rural Ireland, I found that quite difficult. Like, I had a lovely childhood, but I went to a convent secondary school. Never knew what being gay or lesbian was, like, didn't really know anything about the trans experience. It was very, very narrow view of the world, and I found that incredibly confusing, and it really affected my own development as a lesbian. And I think I'm very conscious of that now, and when I think about, you know, Ireland can be very Dublin centric when it thinks about our supports that we provide. And I think something that we really want to do with Dublin Lesbian Line is expand, and as we expand, find ways to reach out and support more of those people doing incredible work across Ireland. Like, I don't even know how many prides we have now, but there's a lot. I was just at Inishowen's Pride fundraiser on Friday up in Bunacrana and Donegal, and to connect with people living in that community and chat to them and hear about their lived experience, it was just so uplifting. Like, they are doing some hard work in, you know, some quite conservative
parts of the country. And I feel quite that's something very important that we can lend a supporting hand to as we continue to hopefully evolve into what the new version of Dublin Lesbian Line is. And again, reach out to us if you'd like to, you know, or support or talk to us or see what we can do in ways to collaborate. We'd love to hear from you.
I think the biggest thing I want people to know about the helpline is there is no issue that is too big or too small. We are there for absolutely everyone. If you're, you know, if you think you have the most privileged and perfect life but you're having a shit day, call us. You know, this is what we're here for. We're not problem solvers, we're listeners. We will help you, absolutely, and we will signpost and we will pass on information that we may have, but the listening ear is really there for absolutely everybody.
I've, you know, met a couple of people that would have moved to Ireland under very difficult circumstances, not by choice. And they would have connected with Dublin Lesbian Line, and that would have been their first point of contact into the LGBTQ+ community in Dublin. And from there, that's where they found their place and their base, and they flourished from there. And now I can see those people out in the community as confident members, you know, out and proud, and I see them at events and I see them, you know, in the pub, etc. And just to see that transformation, and I think like that's why we exist. It's for people like that just don't have that confidence to, or don't have that privilege to have that, I guess, footing from whatever, you know, their life circumstances have been.
Dublin Lesbian Line is for, like we say, it's not just in Dublin, not just for lesbians and not just a line. That's kind of our go-to who we're for. If you identify in any way under the lesbian umbrella, you don't have to be a woman, you can be a non-binary person. If you identify under that label, again, you don't have to be a lesbian, you can also be bisexual. If you see yourself under that umbrella and you're looking for community, that's who Dublin Lesbian Line is for. And we're really open to whoever it is that feels like they can and should benefit from what we do. That's who we're for.
Yeah, it can come in all different forms. And I think something that's really important to remember as a volunteer is like, you don't know who's coming through your doors or who is ringing up on the phone and what position they're coming from. So some people are very vulnerable. Like sometimes we'll meet with people that have just come into Ireland for the first time, they're away from their family, or they might have had to leave their family because they might not feel safe with them. They may know nobody in the country, they may, you know, English may not be their first language, etc. Or it could be somebody that's, you know, just hasn't been out in the community, is coming out later in life, or it could be someone that's in the community and just wants to meet new people. So really we have to, I guess, meet people from a place of where they're at and be really open to that and think about how we can really welcome them in and create that space for them. So like I said, there's different forms of that. Like some people will come to some of our events and then they'll have made a few friends and then they'll continue to come. Others might just come once or twice and that might be a jumping off point for them to now go to other things within the community that might have seemed a bit more challenging to them at first. But really I think what we try to be is like, you know, an open embrace. So if you're looking to find people to connect with that you identify with, whatever that identity might be, trans, non-binary, cis, lesbian, etc., and that we can be that for you.
And I think it's easy if you've been out for a really long time to forget how scary it was the first time you crossed the threshold into a queer place. And so if we can prepare people with, these are the words you might hear, these are the places that you can go, here's the etiquette in a queer bar. Like, if we can give people that information, it's kind of one step closer to them feeling brave enough to, you know, go, you know, and have a good time. And also they'll have met other queer people that might be looking to do the same thing.
I think it's massively important that Dublin Lesbian Line and Women's Night and helplines in general are volunteer led. I think when you start bringing funding and paid employees into things, you start looking at goals and justifying spending and things like that, when realistically we're a listening service and you need to step back from that. I also think it's massively important for people who want to volunteer and want to be in touch with their community in that way, because that was a huge thing for me. That was actually what led me to join Dublin Lesbian Line, was I wanted to give back to my community. And I'm not big into going out. I will go out for a drink or two on very rare occasions, but I wanted to be more connected to my community. And I found that, I never say that the helpline work is enjoyable, but it's very fulfilling work.
I do think grassroots movements are the most powerful, you know, for all of the big social and political issues that we've faced in Ireland in the last kind of 10 years. It's been so incredibly driven by small groups of people getting together to drive change. And I think, you know, often Pride is a celebration, which is wonderful, but it was also a protest. So even though it might seem like a fun day out with your friends, like, you're kind of showing your community that you're there and you're proud. And for someone that's like 15, 16, 17, trying to figure out like their place in the world, and maybe it's part of our community, seeing that there's a small Pride parade walking down their local street once a year is hugely powerful.
For the straight folks who don't mind gays but wish they weren't so blatant. You know, some people got a lot of nerve. Sometimes I don't believe the things I see and hear. Have you met the woman who's shocked by two women kissing and in the same breath tells you that she's pregnant? But gays shouldn't be blatant. Or this straight couple sits next to you in a movie and you can't hear the dialogue because of the sound effects. But gays shouldn't be blatant. And the woman in your office spends her whole lunch hour talking about her new bikini drawers and how much her husband likes them. But gays shouldn't be blatant. Or the hip chick in your class rattling a mile a minute while you're trying to get stoned in the John about the camping trip she took with her musician boyfriend. But gays shouldn't be blatant. You go in a public bathroom and all over the walls there's John loves Mary, Janice ditch Richard, Pepe loves Dolores, etc. But gays shouldn't be blatant. Or you go to an amusement park and there's a tunnel of love and pictures of straights painted on the front and grinning couples coming in and out, but gays shouldn't be blatant. The fact is, blatant heterosexuals are all over the place. Supermarkets, movies, at work, in church, in books, on television every day and night, every place, even in gay bars. And they want gay men and women to go hide in the closets. So to you straight folks, I say, sure, I'll go if you go too. But I'm polite, so after you.
I think it would have been life-changing for me to have seen that when I was that age. I think the trajectory of my life would have been very different. And unfortunately, that just wasn't something that I had access to. So I think it has changed, and I think hopefully it will continue to change and not go backwards with all that's going on in the world at the moment.
I think one of the biggest things that keeps coming back up for the lesbian community is family. There have been numerous women who have come out and lost access to their children. Not so much in recent decades, but in the decades around when Dublin Lesbian Line was starting, it was still a very common practice. And the trouble is, these rights can be rolled back, as we've seen in Italy. You know, lesbian women being removed from their children's birth certificates. Women still can't be put on their child's birth certificate if they conceive that child outside of Ireland, outside of these very strict set of rules that is in Irish legislation. So there are a huge number of women, of queer women, who are not on their children's birth certificates, children that they are related to, and children that they are parenting. And that is massive. That's a huge, huge deal. There is still, obviously, the issues of sexism that are still very prevalent. There is still a bit of an issue within the community. Of course, we have issues within and outside of the community whereby a lot of our services are very much aimed at gay men. And creating spaces for women is still a big fight. I was at the Gay Health Forum last year and I was slightly shocked, and I hate to say it, but I was slightly shocked that there was a speaker from LINC, Lesbians in Cork. But it was incredible to see, because I've been at several gay health forums over the years, and it has been an exclusively male situation, an exclusively male event for a lot of times. Though you would just be sitting there listening to men, and obviously there is a need for that. There is a very great need for that, because there are issues that gay and bi men face that straight men don't face, that queer women don't face. But it was very cool to see a slight broadening of that. That we are starting to open those doors to recognise that actually there's a lot of intersection here. And I actually think we have our trans community to thank for that, because I think a lot of our, you know, our trans siblings are straddling these barriers between communities and are helping to tear them down, which is incredible. We hear a lot about, you know, how trans people are belittled and victimised, and I think we hear very little about how trans people are actually tearing down our barriers, that they are doing the key work and always have done the key work in changing minds and changing the narrative. And I love that. I absolutely love that. It's a scary time. with the rise of the right. It's a scary time as a woman, let alone as a queer woman. You know, I'm out there listening to calls and working within queer organisations, and you hear it, you know, all of the things that are going on in the world, you hear it, and it almost adds another scale to your armour, where you're thinking, okay, we're actually in a very different position than we were in 2015 when we passed marriage equality. And I can remember 2015, I can remember, I did not believe it until they read out the number of votes in Dublin Castle, the 1,200,000. I remember breaking down at that moment, because that was when it was real for me. But I've always been so conscious that these are things that can be backpedaled. That there is, obviously, things like marriage equality, which are in the Constitution, that can't be backpedaled on. But there still are so many rights that we don't have, and things that can be put back, regardless of legislation, on the street. You know, it's a scary time. It's hard to walk around. It's very hard to walk around if you're in any way different. And, you know, there are people in our community who can't hide their difference, who shouldn't have to hide their difference. Nobody should ever have to hide their difference. But it is, you know, it's a worry. I've started telling my friends more and more now, text me when you're home. And I've always done that. But I think now it's kind of back very strongly for me, text me when you're home. Because there's scary things happening, and there's, you know, a lot of discontent that is being aimed at our community incorrectly, because people don't feel like there's anywhere else to aim at.
I think, you know, it's interesting that a lot of the challenges that would have been there 20 years ago still exist, even though Irish society has become more progressive. And I do think something I hear quite regularly is, yes, we had the marriage referendum and that was wonderful, but actually it didn't change much for the average person. You know, it made people have more confidence that there's more acceptance, but the reality is, for a lot of us, we still live, like, you know, lives that we have to be afraid sometimes, or we don't have access to community in lots of our daily life. Like, you know, if you work in the corporate world, you might work in a very, like, straight environment, or whatever else that might look like for you. I think, again, back to what I was saying about trying to be very aware that we don't know how people are coming into us and what personal experiences they've had, and remaining very, like, open and supportive of them.
I get a huge, huge sense of pride from my work. Yes, I really do. It's, you know, helplines in the LGBT community are very much the behind the scenes stuff. You won't see the helpline written about in histories, in Irish gay histories. You know, we're the ad at the back of GCN. We're very rarely front cover kind of thing. We have existed in the background for the entirety of the Irish gay rights movement, from Telefriend starting in 1974, right up to now, when we have multiple LGBTQI listening services, which is incredible. You know, we're sort of, I like to call my volunteers the unsung heroes. We're always in the background. We're never going to be, you know, we might have David Norris's volunteering with us, but if we did, he would be just David. Or Alva Smith's, you know, we may have these people coming in our doors, but it's never going to be kind of the front line. We're always the listening ear that's there around the outside, and that's our place. And we like that. And it's an element of community building and community giving that is, I find anyway, very peaceful.
I'm so proud in particular to volunteer with Dublin Lesbian Line. It's a historic organisation, and, you know, I actually think it's kind of amazing that it's been able to withstand 45 years when there's never been a paid member of staff at DLL. We're all volunteers, always have been volunteers. And I suppose thinking back to the start of the organisation and how brave those women were, not only like put themselves forward to, you know, answer phones or whatever, but to actually be there to meet people and to make those connections, it's so important. And I think it's actually really cool to see how, like, 45 years later, we're basically still doing the same thing, but we've just reinvented how that looks. So yeah, it's really important. And I suppose that historical element is something that's really important to us, which is why, even though, like, now we're not only a helpline, the name Dublin Lesbian Line is so historic and important that it'll probably always be called that.
I think there's a particular power in women's groups. And I had always been one of those people, at least in latter life. I'd gone to an all-girls school, but kind of in those middle teenage years, I'd been more friends with boys than girls. And so it had been a while since I'd been around just girls and just women. And there's, you know, we like to joke in Dublin Lesbian Line that give it to the lesbians and they'll have it done. No problem, you know, lickety split, it is done. And it's done in 15 different ways that you didn't even think of. But there is a certain power in amongst queer women. And it's incredible to be a part of that. And in particular, in an organisation as old as Dublin Lesbian Line, to know that we're here and we're kind of standing on the shoulders of the women who have gone before us is a particularly powerful thing. And it's an incredibly affirming thing. And, in, you know, it prompts so much self-reflection on yourself, your part in a society, what you were doing, where we're going, why we're giving, and all the people who have done this beforehand. So long may she live. Long may Dublin Lesbian Line keep going in whatever form it decides to take, because each new batch of volunteers has a different take on how things go. There is a particular power, I think, in women's organising. And I'm thrilled that, you know, we're getting a chance to spotlight that and share that with people.
I am very proud of what we set up and what we did. There was a great camaraderie, really. There was a great energy. These were women in their 20s. We were only in our 20s. Some of us in our early 20s. Some of us not even in our 20s yet, right? And we were creating things that would be long-lasting and would change things. That dream or that vision that we had to change the world happened.
This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine, let it shine, shine, shine. Everywhere I go, I mean to let it shine. Everywhere I go, I mean to let it shine.
For 45 years of listening, the story of Dublin Lesbian Line was produced by Sean O'Boyle and Maurice Kelleher and was supported by Coimisiún na mBan. Information and support for the issues raised in this programme can be found at Switchboard, LGBTQIA support and resources on 01872 1055 or by visiting theswitchboard.ie.